Welcome to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast, where you get help and guidance through the chaos of parenting a child with anxiety or OCD. This show is for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the guidance of a qualified professional. Here's your host, child therapist, Natasha Daniels.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another episode of the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. Today, I want to talk to you about something that I see so often in my AT parenting community, and I used to see this when I have a private practice as well, and that is anxiety or OCD showing up more for one parent versus the other. And parents will say, why do I see it and they don't? Or why does he act this way, but he doesn't act that way for him? Or why does she do this with me, but she doesn't do it with him? And I'm saying she, because disproportionately it tends to be the mom, but I have seen it the other way as well. So today we're going to talk about why does my child's anxiety or OCD show up more for me, whoever you may be, and what to do about that. The why, the how, and what to do. Before we get started though, I do want to thank NoCD for sponsoring this episode. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy, and they're available in the US and outside of the US. You can schedule your free 15-minute consultation to see if NoCD is the right fit for you and your child. Just go to treatmyocd.com. That is treatmyocd.com, and I'll leave a link in the show notes as well. Also, don't forget to check out my courses at atparentingsurvivalschool.com, where I walk you through systematically how to help your kids crush their anxiety or OCD. All right, so let's talk about this struggle. This does have a ripple effect, because when you are feeling that you are either, and it looks different for different things, the go-to person for your child's anxiety or OCD, they'll only talk to you, or you're the only target of the anxiety or OCD, it can cause ripples in lots of different ways. It can exhaust you. There could be finger pointing with your partner. So let's go through those. I want to first start with, how does this look? Because this is, believe it or not, kind of a broad topic. It shows up differently for each one of you. So I just want to give you an idea of what we're talking about first, and then we're going to go into why this is happening. And after the break, we're going to talk about what to do about it. So this can show up as your child gives you a harder time. They won't get out of bed. They won't go to school. They are having a hard time eating, or they do all these compulsions around you. They won't get out of the shower, or they won't get in the shower. You're having a lot of power struggles, and you seem to have the hardest time with them. If someone else brings them to school, it's not as bad. Or if someone else tells them to get out of the shower, they seem to do it. And I'm using these like examples, these random examples, but it can be anything. I'm just trying to give you some really common ones. And so this can be hard, because often this will be used as evidence against you. You know, it'll be like your partner might be like, I took him to school today and he just got out of the car. I don't see what you're talking about. Or I told him he can't use any more towels and he stopped using them. Or I told him he had to lay in his bed, and even though I know you say that he can't and it's contaminated, he laid down for me. So whatever your scenario is, which will be different for each one of you, the bottom line is there can be fallout from your partner or even from extended family. You know, your parents take your child out and your parents say, you know, I mean, I know that you say that he has restrictive eating or he's got OCD around eating, but he ate his whole plate at the restaurant. That's irritating, right? I had someone say that to me recently. Oh, well, I remember when I took care of your child, when you went away, they ate really fine. You know, it's really hard to not take that personally, because it just feels like there's an attack on your parenting or what you're seeing as a problem. And so this might be used against you by an inexperienced therapist that says, it's interesting how it's a problem with mom, but not dad. Or we got to look at the family dynamics or your parenting approaches. So that could be really irritating. So it can impact in lots of different ways, because when we are feeling blamed or when we're feeling like this is evidence that it's a me problem, it drains us. And when it drains us, we don't have enough energy for what really is important, which is to help our kids. It takes away. And so anything that takes away our energy and our focus from helping our kids with anxiety or OCD is a waste. And we want to reduce waste. We don't want our energy going in different directions that it doesn't need to be going into. So that's the first one. The next one is that maybe your child's more emotional around you. So maybe they cry more, they have a meltdown more, they have a panic attack, they have an anxiety attack. They're all more of the feels. And again, partner, family, friends, even professionals can use that as evidence that you're too soft, you coddle too much, there's something that you're doing that's allowing that behavior. The next one is that maybe they demand more from you. Maybe they want you to do more compulsion. So they are seeking reassurance, but only from you. Or they're demanding that you do, they're demanding that you participate in compulsions, but they would never demand it from the other parent or from the grandparents or from strangers or from the school. And so again, it can really make you feel like, what am I doing that is different than all these other people who are interacting with my child? And can anxiety or OCD just turn on and turn off? If they're struggling, wouldn't they struggle across the board with lots of different people in lots of different environments? And unfortunately, the answer is, and fortunately actually, the answer is no. It can be environment dependent. It could be person dependent. It doesn't mean that the issue is with the environment or the person. It means that your child has anxiety or OCD, and some environments you can really see it, and some environments they hold it together. Some people can really see it, and some people they hold it really tightly together and they don't see it. We're going to get into the why of this in a second, but that can be very frustrating. So let's move into the why. Why is this happening? Well, I do find that it does happen for lots of different reasons, and they're all different and they're all across the board. So we have to explore that with you. One, I just want to say that it's incredibly common in general that a child will feel more comfortable with one parent than the other related to their anxiety or OCD. I have almost never, and I say almost because there were a few times, and nothing is ever all or nothing, right? There's always your outliers. But I have very rarely seen that a child with anxiety or OCD can equally discuss it and can equally show it with both parents. Now, when a person is so acutely dysfunctional and their anxiety or OCD is so severe that they are bedridden or housebound or can't function, well, yes, then everybody sees it because the child or the teen or young adult is so unwell that they can't hide it from anybody. But when they do have a lot of control and it's not to that level of acuity, they can mask, they can hold it together. And more often than not, there'll be one parent that feels like a more go-to parent on this topic. So you might have a kid who can go to another parent for all sorts of things, but not about anxiety or OCD. And that's common. It's almost, like I said, I have almost never seen it where it is equal. They say to me, Natasha, I can talk to my mom or dad equally about my anxiety or OCD. I can go to my mom or dad equally about my anxiety or OCD. They both equally reassure me. They both equally do compulsions for me. Or they both equally pull back my reassurance, and they both equally pull back. There is normally a go-to parent. And that is true for a lot of things. Let's move it out of the mental health world. That's true for a lot of things just in general. Kids are smart and they know, like, I'm going to go to my dad for this topic or these issues. And I'm going to go to my mom for these issues. And I know before my husband passed away, we had clearly defined roles. And I felt like we were a really good yin and yang because I felt like his strengths were my weaknesses and my weaknesses were his strength. And that was really nice because my kids would go to him if something was broken. It was very stereotypical. And I don't mean to be stereotypical, but it was. It was very kind of gender stereotyped, you know, like they would go if something mechanical was broken, their iPad needed help, their computer was having a problem. He was like tech savvy. It was part of what he did for a living. And they would go to him for math. They would go to him for science. They would go for him. My youngest would actually go to him if she got hurt physically. She liked to cocoon, you know, into his big body and feel safe. And so that was something that she would do. But those were his areas. And they would come to me if they were having any anxiety, OCD issues, peer issues, teacher issues, and English. And they would even go to him for history. So really school stuff besides English, they would go to him. I had English. That was, I've written books. I can speak English. So that would be me. And that was okay. I felt insecure about math if they would come to me, or I was at a loss if there was a serious computer problem. And he felt very lost if there was a social emotional issue. And he would say, go to your mom. Or I don't even know if they actually ever even went to him. I think when I talked to him about it, he would say, that's just not my thing. I'm not good at emotions and I'm not good at that kind of stuff. They just need to go to you for that. And we're going to talk after the break as far as what do you do about this, this situation. So, I mean, in my case, luckily, I didn't have a partner who blamed me. He didn't say, you know, it's something that you're doing with your parenting that they are only wanting to come to you. My kids weren't acting out more for me per se, but I saw more. And I did would sometimes say to him, I feel like an anxiety and an OCD hypochondriac because you don't see what I'm seeing. And luckily, I think he was pretty respectful because of what I do for a living, that he kind of gave me the benefit of the doubt. And he's like, sometimes he would see the things I was talking about and other times he wouldn't for a while until it got really bad. But at your home, it might be hard that your partner is not seeing that and is wondering why they're not seeing it. So I just want to preface before I go into like some things that can kind of make this happen more so, to normalize that it does happen in general, and it doesn't have to be for any of the reasons I'm about to list. But let's go into them. One reason is that one parent is a little bit more empathetic. And that might have probably been the case in my house at that time, was I knew the right things to say and I had a different way of interacting with my kids that I think it felt like maybe a safer place to discuss your feelings, because some people just aren't really gifted at what you do when your child's expressing their anxiety or OCD. Like, what do you say? What do you do? And so it might be that one of you is just a little bit more empathetic. And so you're warm and fuzzy. And so you're an easier person for them to be vulnerable with. That doesn't take away from the other parent. It doesn't mean that the other parent is letting their child down or there's something that they need to work on. We're all wired differently. We all have different skills and we can't be skilled at absolutely everything. We just can't. And some of us have our strengths and some of us have our weaknesses. And all of us have strengths and weaknesses. And it's a beautiful thing if you can find someone that complements that. So instead of seeing it as, I have to carry all this weight and I have to do everything, you can say, I have the tools and the skills that my child wants to come to me. Now, you may not love that. That might be exhausting. You might feel unfair. But then you say, what are the tools and skills that my partner has that I don't have? And it doesn't have to involve your kids. I know for me, my husband could geolocate our car no matter where he parked it. He could get from A to B without looking at a map. Like, he was just like an idiot savant that way. And he plotted and planned everywhere we went. You know, he was really gifted at that. And I go around in circles, even with Google Maps, until I get to the place. You know, now that he's gone, I mean, I probably waste a lot of gas because I do a lot of U-turns. You know, oh, I missed that. Or my kids will say, Mom, you just missed that turn. And it's like right there on the map as I'm driving. That's not my skill. But seeing it as, you know, what does the other person bring to the table can be helpful, right? So one of you might be more empathetic, a little bit more approachable. And statistically, that's more the mom than the dad. Not always. I have worked where it was reversed. I have worked with families where it was reversed, but statistically, it was disproportionately the mom. All right. The next one is that one parent might just be more present. And these are stereotypes, but this is what I found in my practice. So there are outliers. There are families that are completely flipped or not like this, but this was the overwhelming amount of families. One, like, parent was more present. They were the ones that tucked their kids into bed, or they were the ones that picked their kids up. They went to the doctor's appointments, the therapy appointments. And so they're around more. So they see it more. And then you have the parent that's been working all day, comes home for dinner, only sees dinner time, homework time, bedtime. And the mom typically is doing all of those things. Maybe the dad takes one of those. And they're not seeing it as much because they're not around as much. And there are situations where it's vice versa, you know, where the mom's not around, the dad's doing everything. The next one, and these are all just potentials of like, why is my child showing me more or depending on me more or involving me more in their anxiety or OCD? Another one that I saw a lot was that one parent was more of a disciplinarian, rougher with the understanding, less patient with the anxiety or OCD, quicker to nip it in the bud, in a more aggressive way. I don't mean like, you know, physically aggressive, but just in a more clipped sort of way. You know, sometimes men have this delivery and they don't even mean it. They're not even doing it on purpose, but there is the way that they deliver these things can be sending inadvertently a message of pull it together, or I'm not going to take this, or you need to get in that shower, or you need to get into that bed. And, or they're a little bit quicker to temper, or they're a little bit quicker to punish, and they're not having like an empathetic response. Kids' anxiety and OCD is very smart and avoidant of those conflicts and confrontations. And so they will hold it together for a parent that intimidates them. That doesn't mean that long term, let's say they just lived with an intimidating parent, that their anxiety or OCD would go away. Because I think that sometimes in some families, that is the message that is misconstrued, is, wow, when they're with you, the kids are a mess. They're crying, they're clinging to you, they're doing these compulsions, they can't function. When you're gone, it's a tight ship. They're not having a problem. They can eat, they shower, they go to bed. I don't need to sleep with them. Like, things are good. Long term, that would just be an internalized struggle. It can turn into somatic issues, physical issues, stomach aches, headaches, long-term disease, because they stuff it. And when they stuff it, it goes inward, and that's not healthy at all. They develop unhealthy coping mechanisms. I know for me, growing up, clearly having an anxiety disorder that was undiagnosed, by the time I was 18, 19, I developed an ulcer because everything was stuffed inside of me. I just learned that nobody was there to hear it or see it or deal with it, and so I kept it to myself, and it physically manifested in an ulcer. And horrible coping skills too, you know, that I had to undo in my 40s so that I could be a normal human being. So it's not good long term. I know sometimes I think the parent that feels like they hold a tight ship and they could, you know, parent this out, they can discipline anxiety and OCD out of their kids. And in the short term, they see evidence that validates that thought because they have the kid for the weekend and boom, the child is like really not showing anxiety or OCD symptoms. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist, and it doesn't mean that that would be healthy long term. Okay, on to the next one. The last one that I wrote, and these are by no means exhaustive. These are just the things that I thought about. But the last one I wanted to talk about at least is one parent is more willing to do stuff for the anxiety or OCD than the other parent. So this is the flip side. I do want to be an equal opportunity flipper of the other side of the coin, where you might have a parent who is oversympathetic to the point where they don't want to see their child sit with discomfort. And so you might have a parent who is willing to do their child's compulsions for them. They'll wipe down things. They'll open doors. They will, you know, repeat things. They'll do whatever the OCD demands, or they will help the child avoid, you know, the child doesn't want to go to school and the parent's like, okay, you don't have to, you know, like I see that you're in distress. I'm not going to cheerlead you or anything. You just don't have to go. Or I see that you're having a hard time going to sleep. I'm not going to like work on skills. I'm just going to lay here with you. And anxiety and OCD is really good at figuring out which parent's going to cave. And so that is the flip side that we always still have to look at is, are we giving in too much? And so our child comes to us to complete the compulsions, get the reassurance seeking, because we are not able to sit with the discomfort. I was trying to find my words. So we want to consider that as well. Now, if you say, no, Natasha, like I'm solid. Like I am actually the one that goes to the therapy sessions or reads and listens to podcasts. And I'm the one that's systematically pulling back my involvement with anxiety and OCD. He doesn't even want to read these things. He doesn't know what we're talking about. That it's just part of the journey, right? It may not be any of those things. It may not be because you're over-accommodating the anxiety or OCD. It might just be that because you're like one of the 99% of families where anxiety or OCD feels more comfortable with one of you than the other. That's very probable because, I mean, kids will pull, they'll hold it together in school all day and not look like they're doing any compulsions or anything until they get home. And so there is one safe parent. But I have seen that there sometimes is a parent that is way over accommodating to the child's anxiety and OCD. And then that person gets more of the meltdowns, more of the crying. So that does happen. Just a little validity to the other parent who's like, you coddle too much. It's not that we can't say, okay, that never happens. I think a lot of times parents are blamed for that and it's erroneously, the blame is erroneously put on their shoulders and it's not. It's just, like I said, 99% of the kids are going to go to one parent more than the other. That's just statistically what I saw. But there is that percentage that does over cater to the anxiety or OCD and isn't pulling back and is like bulldozed. And we just want to make sure you're not that parent because they do exist as well. Okay, after the break, I want to talk about what we do with this. I'm always all about, okay, that's great. We understand now how this happens, why it happens. What are we supposed to do with it, Natasha? Well, I'll tell you right after the break. Stay tuned and I'll be right back.
It's time we put help directly in our kids' hands. Introducing Crushing OCD Course for Kids and Teens.
It was way more helpful than all the other therapy we've ever done because we didn't really know what to do. So we weren't really doing it before. So the course helped to figure out what the exposures are and how to do them.
We're not in therapy and find it really hard to find an ERP trained therapist here. So we're currently with like the public health service, but again, they don't seem to be trained in ERP. It's filled that gap that we don't have that was desperately needed.
This was really well timed for us to use between therapists and to help us like start, get off to a good start with this new practice.
It was easy to use. I was able to do it from my phone or also on the computer.
There's different ages, so there were younger kids, there were teenagers, and so that was really nice too, to have a variety of ages where it wasn't just geared towards younger kids or older kids. It was a nice variety.
It's helpful for our kids to hear it from this like third party as opposed to just us saying it.
I really like the offense and defense method. I love working on poking at OCD while it's sleeping. It makes it a little bit easier to do and it's kind of fun. I'm planning on using it to work on my fear of like holding or touching batteries and stuff like that.
So it was really helpful and I think a lot of other kids would like it. I thought that I was like the only one who had worrying about the weather and stuff. And then there was somebody else on there who worried about the same thing, which was really helpful.
Seems less scary to work on stuff now that I've watched this class and I'm more interested to work on it.
I like trying to do more exposures still and going to, before I wasn't, I just didn't want to do them.
I've worked on some of my bigger compulsions and been successful.
I realized that it was helpful to do like the exposures before. It was like really, really hard. It's still hard, but it's helpful to know that I need to do them.
Before there would be a lot of battles about it. So it is definitely less loggerheads.
Really, really good course and super helpful.
Definitely would recommend this. It's really easy to follow. It's in nice bite-sized videos. I really like the worksheets that go along with it. And I think it's really helpful.
To learn more about this course and register your child or teen, go to atparentingsurvivalschool.com.
All right, welcome back. So before the break, we talked about how it looks when a child's anxiety or OCD shows up more for one parent than the other. We talked about where it can come from, that is normal, that it is happening in almost every household, to be honest. But some of the things that we want to look for, you know, maybe you're more empathetic, maybe one parent's present more, or conversely, maybe one parent is a disciplinarian and is more authoritative and punitive, and or conversely, on the completely opposite end, one parent is too overwilling to accommodate whatever the anxiety or OCD wants, right? So we got them on all sorts of spectrums. But what do you do about it? Okay. Well, the first thing is, for the most part, you can't change this. Because parents who are the target of anxiety or OCD, they want to share the joy with, if you have a partner. I don't have a partner anymore, but if you have a partner, you want to share the joy, right? Or if you're single and you have, you know, your parents or your brother or sister, like the child's aunt and uncle or grandparents, you don't want to feel like you're crazy or the school district, right? You want to be like, hey, here's a little scoop of what I'm dealing with, right? I don't want to be the only one that sees and deals with it. It's exhausting. Unfortunately, here's the bummer part. We don't get to choose that, right? We don't get to choose how our kids want to behave. There are certain things that we can do, and we'll talk about that in a second, but the first step is acceptance of my child, for whatever reason, is feeling safe enough to show me all these feelings. And I'm their go-to person when it comes to anxiety or OCD. Or I'm in tune and educated more, so I see it more. Or my child just feels like they can open up to me, right? So the first step is really just acceptance of this is a situation, and we can grieve the fact that we feel like we're the only one carrying the brunt of it, but there has to come a time where I also have to say, it is what it is. And there's nothing I can do about that. All right, but moving on from that, there's some other things that we can do. One is don't blame the other partner. I feel like I've seen so many couples in my practice who spent so much energy just blaming each other. And so I would see it in different ways. I would see the dad get really angry at the mom and be like, you coddle him. You just baby him, and he's manipulating you, and you're not strong enough. And they will use the evidence, like I said before the break, they'll use the evidence of, when I had him all night tonight, he was fine. Okay, well, that was a short period of time. If you had him for a year all by yourself, would it look like that? No, he might have an ulcer. You know, he might have some physical manifestations, or he might develop a bunch of mental compulsions and things that he has to do to keep it covered, but it wouldn't be good long term. So blaming the other partner isn't really helpful. The other way that it gets blamed is, you know, sometimes the mom blames the dad that you're not helping out and that the kids can't talk to you and you're not approachable or you're too strict, and get really angry. And I know, when I think about my husband, we didn't really argue too much about the kids' anxiety and OCD, but now that I've had some time to reflect and just think about him and my relationship, and, you know, it's weird what happens when someone dies, that you have a lifetime to just reflect on whatever memories you have. It's kind of a sad thing. And I realized he did not have the capacity to handle the emotional aspects of my kids or my stuff, to be 100% honest. And I know it would upset me. I know this podcast isn't about me. Or my marital relationship. But, you know, I would get very upset that he wasn't emotionally available to me. Like, and I'm talking more about me. But I think a lot of times women I saw in my practice would get upset that their husbands weren't emotionally available to their children. And it felt like a choice. Like, you're choosing not to be emotionally available, or you're choosing to not be emotionally available to our kids. And what I have come to realize in my grief and in my reflection is, some people don't have the skills or the capacity. It's not a choice. They do not have it in them. Now, if they really wanted to, could they go into deep therapy and work on it and build on it? Yeah, right? I mean, we are always able to grow. But I think it's overwhelming and intimidating for a lot of people, especially as, you know, as you get older and you're adults. Right? It can feel so intimidating, and they may not have the ability, and that is okay. And accepting that as well, of, you may not have the capacity to be the emotional go-to person for our kids. And I'm okay with that, because I accept that you have your strengths and I have my strengths, and emotional intelligence may not be yours, or being emotionally connected may not be yours. And that's just reality. And I wish I had that epiphany when he was alive, because I think that would have stopped a lot of arguments and blaming instead of just opening up and being like, you have your strength and I have my strengths and that's okay. But you know, we can always like Monday, what is that expression? Monday night quarterbacking. I could always look back and be like, oh, I wish I had done this. But I just want to add my two cents for those of you that have a husband or a wife, you know, maybe understanding their limited capacity in some way. And that's not putting them down, but it's saying like, just like he could have taught me about how to read a map, you know, and how to find directions and how to understand directions and how to be like, have some understanding of my location in space and time. But that really wouldn't have changed because I don't have an innate skill of knowing where I am. You know, you can't tell me go north. Like, what do you mean? Straight, left, or right? And then that kind of depends on where I'm at. So that's a deficit that I am okay with accepting that I can't do it, right? It's okay. So that's the first. That's the second one, I think. Or that's the first one. Don't blame the other partner. The next one is delineate roles to reduce overwhelm. So if you do have a partner and you're recognizing that they are not emotionally savvy enough to be able to handle your child's anxiety or OCD, that is what it is. But what are their roles and what are your roles? And can they take some things off your plate if you define your roles so that it's not all landing on you? If it's disproportionately on you, like, okay, you've got the kids and everything related to the kids and he's got work. And nowadays we have work too. Not to go on my feminist rant, but you know, it's like, I feel like we added more stuff to our plate instead of actually just getting an equal plate, but well, that's another story. But then it's like, okay, we're expected to do, in a stereotypical household, you know, we're expected to maybe keep the house and the chores and the kids and the doctor's appointments and the meals. And then now we have a full-time job or a part-time job and a career. And our husband often has a job. And I know that there's a lot of things I'm saying today that are very stereotyped and not accurate, but I do feel like a lot of us are in this position. And if that is the case, then instead of feeling frustrated that your partner needs to take on more responsibility around your child's anxiety or OCD, they may not have the capacity to do that. But can they pick the kids up from school once in a while? Or can they take them to the extracurricular activities so that you don't have to always be like the chauffeur? Or can they pick up some of the chores? Or can they make some of the meals? Like, what other things can they pick up so that you can devote more energy towards the anxiety or OCD? Something to think about. The next one is, I think it can be really helpful, depending on your child and depending on the dynamics, to talk to your child with anxiety or OCD together. And so that it's not always just mom always talks to me about my anxiety or OCD, but then there's dad out there. And then mom catches dad up, but I don't know as a child that dad's caught up. So I still feel uncomfortable talking to dad because I don't know that he knows. The biggest dysfunction I've seen around this, and I've seen this in my AD parenting community, I saw it in my private practice, is when the child with anxiety or OCD doesn't want the dad to know. And you can flip this. It can be sometimes they don't want the mom to know. I mean, it's such a small percentage that I'm going to speak in generalities, but you can have a situation where the child will say, please don't tell dad. Like, please don't. And it creates this unhealthy dynamic of, I'm in cahoots with my child about their anxiety or OCD and I'm not sharing it with dad. And I have worked with some moms where I'll say, oh, that's really not healthy. We don't want to keep things a secret. And they'll say things like, well, I don't want to ruin their trust with me. And as I dig deeper, in some situations, they didn't really trust the father's response either. They felt like the dad would say something wrong or would put them down or would not understand the mental health struggle. And I have met some of those dads where I was like, let me talk to him. I'm sure it'll be fine. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. Now I see why everyone is saying that. He is unreachable. And so there are some exceptions to what I'm about to say. There are some parents out there, and flip it around, it could be the wife too, where they can be toxic, and it is really not safe for our kids to talk to them about anxiety or OCD or put them in the line of fire and involve that parent at all, because they are just not going to be supportive or helpful. And I have unfortunately met some parents like that, where after I'd have a parent session, I'm like, oh my gosh, they were absolutely right. Now, that was the minority, though. The majority are well-intentioned parents who are just don't have the capacity for the emotional stuff, or are just not home enough. Maybe they do have the capacity, but they're not home enough, or they travel, or their work is like really demanding, and they're not able to take their kids to the appointments or spend time with them, whatever it may be, or being divorced and they're sharing households. And so it can be really helpful to be a united front by meeting with your child together and talking about their struggles and not keeping things separated or secret from the parent. That is a very, very, very unhealthy dynamic. And it's not keeping your child's trust. It is triangulating your family, that it's me and you against dad. And you may not be meaning to do that, but it really sets the other parent up for disaster, or me and you against your mom. And I've seen that. I've actually seen that too. And so that's not helpful. You know, don't tell dad this, or he's, you know, he probably won't let you do it. Or don't tell dad this, but I'm going to let you, you know, stay home because I know that you're anxious. Or even outside of anxiety or OCD, I've seen that triangulated parenting where it's me and the kid against the parent. So unhealthy. Now, if you have an abusive partner, sometimes that happens. That's still dysfunctional. It would be better if they didn't all live together. But I get that when it's a survival situation. But that's not what I'm talking about. So sitting down and talking with your child, with both parents, about anxiety or OCD can be really helpful. Or saying, you want me to talk to your dad about this, I'm going to share this with your dad. And being overt about, I'm going to share this with your dad because we both love you. He's your parent too. We both need to know what's happening in this household. The last thing is, you know, share your observations. And so in my house, you know, when my husband was alive, he wasn't having direct conversations with my kids about their anxiety or OCD, but at night I would debrief him. I would say things like, oh, I just want you to know, like, her sensory motor OCD is really bad right now. Or, you know, I went to the 504 meeting and this is what we're doing. Or, oh, this is what, you know, our son said today. I feel like this might be a new theme. We talked nonstop about it. He was up to date. He knew moment to moment all their struggles and what things they were going through. And then he was also support for me because I was able to be like, oh my gosh, this is so much. And he was, for as much as he didn't have the capacity to handle emotional stuff, he was very good. I think he undersold his abilities and his capabilities, and so he shut down. But he was always really good to be supportive of me, you know, and so he was my outlet. So if your partner is not able to be there for your kids directly, can they be there for you? They may not be able to. They may not have the capacity. But are you keeping them up to date with what is going on, or are they out of the loop? And I've met with a lot of dads who had really good intentions, but they were out of the loop and they didn't know. They're like, I don't know why she does that. You have to ask the wife, or I don't know why he does that. Talk to his therapist. And keeping them in the loop will make them feel more connected. And so I know it's tricky, and I know there's no, like, you know, simple answers for this, but I hope that you found this helpful as far as, one, understanding you're not alone. This is normal. I rarely have met a family that doesn't have this dynamic, and it's not always anyone's fault. It's not always that dad is a really harsh disciplinarian and mom is a pushover. I just had to include those because there are times where that is the case, but more often than not, it's just the dynamic. It's just, there's always a go-to parent, and it's typically the mom. Sometimes not, but typically it is. And what do we do with that? What do we do with that in our relationship with our partner, if we have one, or our parents or our siblings as an adult, right? Like our parents always have, you know, something to say if they're alive. And sometimes our siblings too can pipe in depending on how close you are. But what are you going to do with that situation? Because it is what it is, but understanding that it's not your fault, and it's, you're not causing something, I think is important, because we start believing the accusation sometimes and think, what am I doing wrong that my child can function absolutely everywhere but with me? And you're like the rest of us. You're like, welcome to the club. That's how it goes. There's nothing new with that one. So I hope that you found this helpful on some level. And don't forget to hit a star on Google or Stitcher or Apple, wherever you consume your podcasts. And if you write a review, I greatly appreciate it. It helps other parents hear from you that this podcast is valuable. And always to show my gratitude, I always like to read one if I see a new one out there, which I do. So I want to thank Joanna, who wrote Invaluable Resources and Support. Parenting a child with anxiety and OCD is a challenge for which most of us are not equipped or prepared. The wealth of information, expertise, and empathy that Natasha offers through this podcast, her personal experiences, and her resources have been an incredible support and help to me and my family. I share her resources with anyone that I think can benefit from them because I've experienced the tremendous help they can be. She's both knowledgeable and realistic, which I so appreciate. I cannot recommend her enough. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I love when you guys take the time to write a review. That's why I read them. So maybe I'll be reading your review next time. Don't forget to find the sparkle in everything you do, and take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. To get additional support raising a child with anxiety or OCD, visit Natasha's online school of on-demand classes at atparentingsurvivalschool.com.